Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse. This is Stacy Bell from Focus Fun, and with me is...
Hi, it's Ness Jones. I'm in Australia, and I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And who is this strange person that is also joining us today? Somebody that wasn't here last week.
Who could it be?
Oh, Kyla knew it's me back from Bonnie, Scotland. This is Sarah from the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions. So did you miss me?
We did.
I can't believe you managed to do a whole podcast without me. Anyway, we've been pottering around Scotland for a whole week and finally got home. And we had to stay an extra day because dear early had a bout of colitis, which was not very nice, which does lead, though, into this week's episode, which is all about gut bacteria and how it can affect dogs' behaviour and so on and so forth. And our resident expert, Miss Jones, is going to lead us on this one. So, Ness, tell us a bit more about what we're talking about this week.
Well, firstly, is Ernie okay?
He is, yes. We gave him some probiotics and prebiotics in his food and just gave him sort of some turkey, and he put himself back together and managed the epic drive home, bless him, without exploding.
Poor little Ernie. I do love probiotics and prebiotics. So I'm going to preface this episode by saying I am a canine nutritionist and small animal naturopath, and you might hear a little bit of bias from me because I am a raw feeder. So I will always advocate for raw feeding as opposed to processed foods.
Do we have to do a bias alert,
There we go. There you go, so I actually have an article here which I wrote, would you believe? And it was published in Dogs.
Is that going to go in the show notes?
Yes, I've got a few links for the show notes. But this one I wrote for Dogs Naturally magazine, and it was published last year, I believe. And it's called, Are Your Dog's Behaviour Problems Linked to Gut Health? So it's a big topic, but I shall just run you guys through it. So the first thing I noted in this and in the article was that if you have a child, would you fill it full of sugary, refined sweets and sugars and expect it to behave normally? I mean, we might sort of end up with a kid that's over aroused or cranky. And, you know, if we feed them an appropriate diet, then hopefully that will be something that will be not necessarily remedied, but it will certainly help their behavior issues, because we know that feeding too much sugar to kids can make them hyperactive and terribly annoying.
Yeah, but I don't think in kids that you usually use the word arousal. I think hyperactive is more appropriate, because when, you know, you say aroused in human things, it's just like a totally different image there.
Well, it depends, Stacey, on your mind, I guess. I wasn't going there. Hyperactive's good anyway. Oh, dear. Anyway, the University of California in Los Angeles did a recent study, and they found that gut microbes link to areas in the brain that can affect mood and behavior. And this can potentially include responses to fear. So research has also looked at inflammation as an immune response to things like obesity, high sugar, high quantities of trans fats and fats and other unhealthy foods. And these can cause mood disorders such as depression and anxiety. Further research has shown that inflammation as an immune response to obesity, high sugar, blah, 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 all those other things I just mentioned, may also be a precursor to mood disorders such as depression and anxiety. So this is obviously something we really need to take into account with dogs with separation anxiety, if you ask me. just carrying on briefly. I don't want to get too bogged down into, get too bogged down, basically. But high sugar processed foods can lead to bacterial toxins called, I'm going to see if Stacey can pronounce this, but I'll give it a go first. Lipopolysaccharides.
Ooh, that sounds right. That sounds really right.
And these normally hang out. Hey?
I said, we'll go with that.
Yeah, cool. These normally hang out in, safely in your dog's gut, but dun, 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 dun. When they enter the blood, thanks to those high fat processed meals, they become toxic and they can affect dog behavior. Do you want me to carry on with this?
Well, yes, but also I wanted to just like talk about also that Mondo in and like et al. I'm gonna go with et al. Did a study that just came out in January 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That talks about, and we can link this in the show notes. It's a small study, 40 plus dogs. They had a control, and they tested the gut microbiome of dogs with aggression and phobias and then normal dogs. And interestingly found that they tested the hormonal levels of the three groups as well. And the hormonal levels did not have a significant difference, but the gut microbiomes were different. And so the ones that had aggression had kind of similar within each other. And then same with the phobic ones and the same with the, you know, quote unquote, normal behavior dogs. So I thought that was really interesting. There were a lot of words that I couldn't pronounce in that particular study.
Is that the study with the graphs on it?
It does have pretty graphs on it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I know I've seen one not so long ago that had some lovely graphs on it, that so you could see, he had a nice visual representation as well as all the big words. So it did mean that you could actually see it. Rather than read something and go,
it
is interesting. So the lipopolysaccharides destroy the brain cells and that make the brain cells that make the neurotransmitters serotonin and dopamine, which we know as the so-called happiness hormones.
Yeah, and
so that's really interesting too.
Interestingly, I didn't realize that so much of, I think it's like 90% of serotonin is made in the gut.
Yeah.
I think that's really, I mean, that number alone, like kind of
significant.
If one fact could convince me that there is a link between the gut and behavior, that is a very compelling one.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's plenty of studies in the gut microbiome and how it affects human brain health. It's just there aren't any many for dogs.
The ones that I saw were all fairly recent, actually, because I think this is something that's like catching on for dogs right now. So there were a few recently. But they're all small and they're all like, it's more like pilot study-ish. But all of them had the same basic conclusion that there is a link. And so I think it's one of those things that we can look at and say, we need to learn more about this, but that it's really interesting and promising area.
Absolutely.
It's a lovely area, of research, isn't it? A lovely new area. And it's nice when they start looking at things like this, because it's, you know, it's the more holistic approach to things, the better, because, you know, it's not just one thing, is it, that drives everything. It's not just, you know, there's so many things that feed into it. I mean, as we know, with environment and, you know, upbringing and genetics and, you know, everything, so much. So it's I'm really happy that they're doing more research into this.
Well, I even was listening to a podcast about this very topic, and they were talking about even just how the puppy is born can affect their founding biome, right? Like, so if the puppy is born with a C-section versus vaginally, then they
would...
Did
you just say vaginally?
What do you say? Not vaginally? I just wanted to fit vaginally.
This is a child-friendly podcast, Stacey. I'm shocked.
That's where they pop out.
What if mum is listening to this in the car with her kids?
That's its name. That's what things come out of, and that's what it's called. Let's not start calling things weird names.
Okay. Anyways,
we could call it a moo moo or something.
No.
I think we should be all comfortable calling our lady parts by the proper names. So let's just go with the puppies that were born
out of the moo moo,
out C-sections. You know, they get that founding microbiome from the vagina and the placenta. And as the dog, stop laughing every time I say vagina.
You're going to have to keep saying it now. Just keep saying it. So she desensitizes to it. Just keep going.
Ness just can't handle it. Anyways, that's all I was saying as part of the looking at the big picture, that also has an effect. And they were talking about the weaning process for puppies, and like how when we think of weaning, like, you know, moving from nursing to having food, that I think when they're looking at like street dogs, the puppies will, that process is a slower process, right? So they're getting milk from their mom in addition to whatever is on the street, and regurgitation, which also has different guys in it. I'm going to call them guys, different guys in it. You know, that's a whole different process than what many of our puppies maybe in different situations are in. So it was a very interesting one. We should really, it was with Dr. Amber Bastian. She's a vet behaviorist. She's really knowledgeable and interesting. And she also did say vagina on their podcast.
Good girl.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention something which I find very interesting. So talking about the gut-brain connection yet again. Mm. So the enteric nervous system, let's just call it the ENS, is located in the gut, whereas the central nervous system is in the brain and the spine, and they are both linked. So the ENS links to the emotional aspects of the central nervous system. So put simply, every time we eat, the ENS sends a message to our brain that affect our emotional states. How about that? And it's true for dogs too. It turns out that the ENS links directly to the emotional aspects of the central nervous system, meaning, and this is according to Patricia McConnell, we all know, of 2011. She says, and I quote, "Your gut and your emotions are linked directly together as a way of helping the body make decisions about its behavior, as this relates to our lives and the lives of our dogs in two ways. First, comfort food really is comforting." This is really interesting, guys. "Your ENS communicates directly with the emotional centers in your brain." We've said that. "And certain types of food really do make people feel less stressed and more calm. Studies show that high fat, energy rich foods reduce stress in lab mice, and that people feel soothed by mac and cheese, even if they don't know what it is." So, ew. That food is pumped straight into their stomach via a stomach tube, and they don't know what it is, they can feel soothed by that. How about that?
The bottom line is mac and cheese via an intravenous line. Really?
I know. It sounds like gross, doesn't it? I know. Oh, I know. But, you know, that, I find that quite interesting. So you don't even need to know what it is, but the food can affect your emotions. And then we haven't talked about leaky gut syndrome either. Have you guys heard of leaky gut?
Uh-huh.
You have?
Yeah, well, I've heard of it, but I don't know. It has to do with, well, I'm not going to say it because I'll probably not explain it as well as you. So you go.
Well, I have got it written down here to make it easier to explain. I have to admit. Okay, so that leaky gut can also affect the way dogs and us, of course, can behave. Leaky gut is caused by processed and grain-based foods alongside food additives can cause leaky guts in our dogs. So this is when the spaces between cells lining the gut expand and the contents of the gut leak into your dog's blood. And this includes those lipopolysaccharides I mentioned earlier, as well as toxins, undigested food particles, and bacteria. It sounds gross, doesn't it? So if we know that dog behavior problems can stem from not receiving a natural diet free from chemicals and preservatives, and these problems can include separation anxiety, aggression, hyperactivity, obsessive compulsive disorders, and self-mutilation. So I think diet really is important when we have a dog with separation anxiety for that reason. And Lomonoko, some bloke, I think, or it could be a woman, I'm not sure, says, could you imagine spending time with a toddler who lived on a diet of Snickers and Kool-Aid? Aside from the obvious health benefits, there are very good behavioral reasons a parent might restrict the amount of processed sugars in her child's diet. Good food promotes good behavior. Similarly, feeding a species-appropriate, high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet can help in calming an anxious or hyperactive dog. Many pet owners note a reduction in demand or anxiety behaviors after switching from a high-carbohydrate diet to a high-protein or low-no-carbohydrate diet. I do want to preface that by saying, firstly, that much of the processed foods that you buy at the supermarket or at the pet shop have got high carb content and have got processed, you know, they've got stuff in there to make sure that they don't go off. So there's chemicals in there and they're highly processed and they've got sugar in them. So that might be why we would be looking at a more natural diet for dogs. However, any of this stuff, there's no magic pills, right? So it's not going to fix your dog's separation anxiety, but it's just another tool in the toolbox to get you across the line.
Talking about diet, it's really, I think, overwhelming for a lot of people because there's just like a lot of things, there's a lot of conflicting advice out there. And even if there is advice that you feel like you can trust, it's, they don't just say feed your dog this, right?
No.
They'll say, oh, look for something that has quality protein and look for stuff that has low carbohydrate and look for, you know, this or look for that. And many pet owners don't have time to research, and many pet owners, I would hazard a guess to say that they don't feel confident with making their own food, whether that's a raw diet or a cooked diet. And when you're looking at those, when you start researching that, because that's, you know, something that I did with Rowan is, you know, it's like, oh, if you're going to feed them broccoli, if you want these nutrients, you should feed the broccoli raw. And if these nutrients, you feed it cooked, and this needs to be this way, and this needs to be that way. And you have to make sure you have this and this and this and not this. And like, so you can feed your dog raw or a home cooked diet and still be missing out on some major nutrients that they need.
So, it's a minefield, isn't it, Stacey?
It really is.
We're up there with there with sex and religion when it comes to conversations on Facebook about food. You know, if you join any of the breed groups, there's always, I mean, God knows how many times a day, and even on the separation anxiety groups, someone who says, what do you feed your dog? Because my dog's got this. And then everybody piles in with, well, I feed mine this, I feed mine that. And then you get the, well, this is better. And then someone else going, no, well, actually, this is better. And it just ends up as one big row. And the whoever it is who posted in the first place still has no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It actually doesn't have to be complicated. But yes, everybody's an expert and everybody's got an opinion. But it does not have to be complicated. Actually, if anybody wants a raw food diet created for them, I do sell them. If they want to jump on my website, Rough Diamonds, R-U-F-F, Diamonds Dog Services.
So do you sell, when you say you sell them, do you actually sell the food or you sell recipes?
No. So, well, I give them a plan. So I talk to them about their needs, what's going on with their dogs physically, you know, health-wise, and devise one from there. But okay. I do have some tips that people can do on their own right here and right now. If you would like me to run through them.
I would love for you to run through them.
Okay. So probiotics and prebiotics are really good for your dog. So probiotics are the beneficial bacteria that we like in our guts, whether it's us or our dogs. So things like lactobacillus and bacteroids, they can help restore and maintain the healthy gut microbiome.
Okay, I have a question about that before you go further.
Yeah.
Is any brand okay? Or are there brands that are better than others? And how do you know how much to feed them?
So I would do it by weight. In terms of brand, they all have different bacteria in them. And that's why I mentioned lactobacillus and bacteroids.
Which is the one that's it? Because there's one of them that, I've listened to, there's been some recent research with some of the bacterias, and the one that's in the one that we need that they put in things like Yakult is often one that with dogs can actually affect their system in a negative way, not a positive way. So you need ones that are more towards dog gut bacteria, not human gut bacteria, don't you? So you do need to make sure that it's something that's formulated right for dogs, not just buying them one from the supermarket that's for you.
Yeah, yeah. And that Yakko is probably full of sugar anyway. And that's why I mentioned those two bacterias. Prebiotics also in tandem with the probiotics are really helpful because they are the indigestible fibers that the probiotics feed off, so it makes them more effective. You can do it naturally, so you don't have to buy stuff from the supermarket. I know people that feed their dogs fermented veggies and kefir, so they are the ones with the prebiotics in them.
My friend feeds her dog kefir.
Yeah.
She makes her own kefir. I suppose it depends where you, I don't know, she calls it kefir, I don't know really. I mean, I've got a funny accent anyway, so it could be either, whatever you prefer. She makes her own. She does, is it water kefir?
Yeah, I've made mine as well.
She drinks it and she gives it, and the dogs love it. She made me try it once, I do not like it. And if you could see, dear listeners, Stacey's pulling the most god-awful faces. I presume she doesn't like it either.
She's going to pull an even bigger face when she hears what I've got to say. So green tripe is full of prebiotics and probiotics and digestive enzymes. And it is the most stinky, disgusting stuff, but dogs love it.
So stinky. And
it supports
just before, do you get green tripe in a can in Australia?
You can't buy it in a can over here, no. I know you can.
You can in America, can't you, Stacey? Yeah.
I don't know. I've always just used it, like if I get Zeewe Peaks food, you know, that dried.
That's expensive.
It is, but I use it as a treat for training, you know, so it I'll get that with the tripe in it, so I don't have to like deal with like, it smells so bad.
It's disgusting. Yeah, you don't want to get it on your fingers. It's like garlic. It kind of seeps in there. I get a fresh one from a company called Organic Paws, which is based here in Australia.
Oh,
and yeah, so it does stink, but it's it's as good as you can get when you take in the government regulations. So it's not completely unadulterated, but it's as good as you can get with what they have to do to it. In terms of the government,
you might need to explain that a bit, Ness. What do you mean by government regulations?
They've got you have to do things to it. I'm not exactly sure what they are, to be able to sell it. So you can't just give it to them completely out of the animal, like without doing things to it. Some sort of process. I don't really know what it is. I have been told, but off the top of my head, I can't think what it is.
Well, being a girl from originally from Yorkshire, which is the north of England, it wasn't green tripe, but I remember relatives eating tripe and onions for dinner and buying it from the butchers and these big slabs of white mert stuff.
So that's not the stuff you would give to your dog because it has been processed and bleached and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay. So number two is a feeder species appropriate diet. So keep it free from grains, preservatives, sugars, and processed foods. Many dogs become less hyperactive and anxious with this one simple step, which is obviously anecdotal evidence from owners that they find that that can help.
So that's a whole nother big can of worms, the grain-free stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, look, when any kind of processed food is cooked and when you cook the food, you're diminishing the vitamins. And that's why when you buy a bag of dog food, it says, oh, we've got this vitamin, that vitamin, blah, 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 blah. It's not because it was originally in the food, or it might have been, but it's the cooking process removes it. So they have to add it back in. And they do that using synthetic vitamins. So it's not pure, if you like. It's not the original what was originally in there. It's added in and it's processed vitamins.
Yeah, okay. But I think the whole grain-free thing with the DCM and dogs and everything if you read the releases from the FDA, it will say that some dogs with DCM were on grain-free diets or boutique diets and other ones were not, and some, you know, it and so it wasn't really a real direct link, but I think the headlines in the newspapers and stuff that went out in articles was that there is a direct link. And so I think it's not as clear as those articles make it out to be. I think it's a little more complex than that, like everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, if it was a choice between buying grain-free and buying normal process, I'd still go with the grain-free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think for some dogs, I mean, I do have to say, I think for some dogs that grains are not a bad thing. I mean, I know that a long time ago, we had a husky mix that we used to feed raw food. And I remember reading back then about the hormone amylase that you get in your saliva to help you digest carbohydrate. And it's not just the amylase is that hormone that helps people digest carbs, isn't it? So even within human beings, I think is it in Japan where the Japanese people have more of it than the rest of us do? Which is why they can eat all these carbs and they're not all like the size of houses. They're all still slim and you know, bouncing around because they've got more of the hormone to digest it with. And I think it's the same with, I remember reading about that a lot of the northern breeds in particular are the ones that are closer to their ancestors in type and looks carry less amylase than the dogs that are less like their ancestors, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Mm.
What about things like you see like oatmeal, for example, is, I guess, a grain, but also I thought considered a prebiotic or no?
I am not 100% sure off the top of my head, but oatmeal or oats can be calming. So for a dog with separation anxiety, they might be a good addition to their dinner regardless.
What was that diet that somebody, was it who brought out a diet where you were supposed to give them potatoes and then the protein a little bit later? Have you seen that? I mean, I don't think it's, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that's out there somewhere. But it was, I can't remember who developed it now, but it's supposed to be about something to do with it, with the calming effect of carbohydrates, but not having them at the same time as the protein. It was about splitting them up. It was a very strange thing.
It's called food combining. Food combining, yeah. So you eat certain foods at certain times and you, yeah, you, it was, you divide.
Yeah.
Yeah, you, yeah.
Yeah. But the, there was a thing, it was a dog thing. I think it was, I don't know if it was Purina that came up with something.
I haven't heard of it for dogs. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Number three, bone broth is really good. So it supports the immune system. It has collagen in it and it lines the gut and reduces intestinal inflammation. So that will help. There's lots of gut supplements, but I'll just name two. So turmeric is an anti-inflammatory and slippery elm is really good because that also lines the gut. Then we have number five, which is omega-3s. So high levels of omega-3s may help recovery of psychiatric injury. So basically low levels may lead to stress, anxiety, and aggression in dogs. So in there have been studies done on omega-3s in humans. It can decrease depression and anxiety symptoms, and it may also help improve memory, which can, and this is good for separation anxiety dogs, it can stave off cognitive decline. Now, we know that some dogs seem to get separation anxiety symptoms as they age and they get cognitive degeneration. So omega-3 may help. And you can quite easily add that in yourself naturally by adding in raw eggs or oily fish. So not every meal, but, you know, maybe twice a week you might add in some sardines or something like that.
So my dog gets raw eggs when she steals the ones I've taken out of the chicken table by accident.
The omega-3s are also really good for inflammation, just in general.
Yeah. Another thing that is good for your dog, providing fresh rainwater, if it's at all possible, as opposed to the stuff that comes out of the tap, which can be heavily chlorinated. I know here in Australia, so I'm lucky enough to be on rainwater, so we don't have access to chlorinated water. But my parents' house, you turn on the tap there and the chlorine coming out of that tap is stinks. And even when you use a filter, water filter, and I can taste the chlorine in it. It's that strong.
Me too. We are on a well, so we don't have, it's not treated like that. And whenever I go to somebody's house that's on city water, I can like just
smell it.
Like you're exactly like you're saying, you turn on the water, I could just like smell it. It's really funny.
That's interesting because, again, being a Yorkshire girl, they had to give us milk when I was a kid because we didn't have enough fluoride in the water. So everybody's teeth used to fall out.
Yeah. And look, I was born in New Zealand and they do it here now, but they didn't until quite recently. They put fluoride in the water. And this is a good one. So exercise about 30 minutes a day can help alleviate our leaky gut. So it's good for us and it's good for our dogs. A lady called Dr. Ross, Chloe Ross, I'm just going to add this in out of interest. She's done some sort of research on calorie restriction. So reducing food intake without causing malnutrition, obviously, has been linked to long-term health benefits and potentially positive effects on cognition and behavior. She reckons it increases health span and lifespan and can delay the onset of age-related decline. It can decrease aggression, anxiety, and fear. Yeah.
and help improve memory and learning in animals. But yeah, I just thought I'd add that in there for interest.
So I have a question for you. You're going to hate this question because of how you're biased towards raw.
I am. And there's a reason for that too, Stacey. So
I know. I know there's a reason, but okay. There's two questions that I have. One of them is like, I'm a vegetarian, so I don't know if I can manage it. Like, honestly, all the raw food like really grosses me out. And so in your opinion, what would be the second best option if...
Well, I think you need to man up for starters, take a spoonful of cement and harden up. But yes, my suggestion in that case would be, if you can't handle the raw food, is to buy pre-packaged raw food. Plenty of products out there, and it literally is, you know, scooping out the contents and putting it in their bowl, so you're not handling it really.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for a suggestion?
I think that's pretty good. I still though, I think I get really stuck on the, okay, but then still you don't know if the food company, and this is with all types of prepared food, or if you do it yourself, you still don't know if they're taking the kind of care that you would want them to, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Are they making sure it's sourced? Like, to me, if I'm going to feed my dog raw food, I want to make sure it's sourced ethically, and I want to make sure that it's balanced in a way that he needs it to be. And I want to make sure, like, so then it's still overwhelming, right? So it's definitely one of those things that's not easy.
Yeah. So that's a case of do your research. So the company I buy from, if I'm buying pre-packaged, is Organic Paws, and I do know that they do all that stuff, you know, that is done ethically, you know, it's, but organic, it's expensive.
It's not cheap.
No, it's a huge market as well now, isn't it? I mean, I know that, you know, 15 years ago in England, you didn't get that much. There was a very small supplies of prepackaged raw food, whereas now there's just so many different ones, and you know, yeah. And again, it's back to, that's some just of them, as overwhelming as the canned stuff and the dry stuff now. There's so many,
and some of them aren't that good, so you really need to know what you're feeding your dog and where it's coming from. And because look, when you say ethically, it's not just that. So some of the companies, and I would say this is probably more for the processed kind of food, but it's the meat that's not fit for human consumption. So why is the meat not fit for human consumption? Is it rancid? Is it poisoned? Is it the sweepings off the floor? You know, so you have to look at all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So my second question is, my biggest concern with raw is then coming out the other end as poop. And, you know, the possible harmful things to humans there, like the pathogens that you would find in their feces. So that could be salmonella, or it could be whatever else.
Okay. So I've been feeding raw for a long time, probably 15 years now, and I'm still here. If they poop out somewhere at a park, I pick it up using a plastic bag, same as everyone else. And if it's in my yard, I use a scoop. I'm not picking it up with my hands, and I wash my hands after I've done it, after I've picked it up. The good news with raw is that less farts. So now we've talked about vaginas, poop, and farts. I think we've got the trifecta now. less farts, and the poops are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a lot easier. They're not these big, smelly, freaking huge messes that, you know, maybe a bit gooey. They're smaller and a lot easier to pick up too.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to just add this in before we go any further on that one with the unfit for human consumption. In the EU, all ingredients for pet food have to be fit for human consumption. So it's, I don't know whether that changes when you get over your way and America, but it has to be labeled. Yeah, it has to be labeled as not fit for human consumption so that people don't go around eating cans of dog food. But by regulation, it has to be from, you know, animals that are not diseased or that are, you know, poor welfare and all that.
Right.
So that's something that we don't have to worry about so much over here. It might not be the best food in the world, but we're not going to get anything that's, you know, illegal or in that shouldn't be in poor welfare.
I think it's a case of read the packaging, because it says it's packaged in America or Australia or whatever, where does it come from? Mm. It could be from China.
Okay. What about the chances of the commercial raw diet, so like the ones that you can buy, being more apt to be contaminated by potentially harmful bacteria?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. It depends on where they're made, where the meat comes from, the processing. We don't know. You have to do your research. And then you have to rely on the company to be forthcoming as well.
Yeah. So when you say do your research, I'm going to put you on the spot just a tiny bit, just because I think this is important for our listeners. What kinds of questions would our listeners ask to make sure that they're making smart decisions in what they're buying?
So where does the meat come from? How is it processed? How is it just killed? How is it processed as, and how is it, you know, what is in there? The ingredients are, where do those ingredients come from? What additives are in there? What preservatives are in there? All that sort of stuff. If it's raw, there's still going to be additives and preservatives in there. Mm-hmm. Because how do they put them on the supermarket shelf?
Right. The other thing I wonder is if, are we expecting that the companies that, these companies that sell the raw food diets have a nutritionist or a vet on staff that would help them make sure that the food is balanced for the dog?
Yeah, I mean, you do need that. You need someone that knows something about canine nutrition, whether it's a vet or a nutritionist, so that the right things are going in there. So you don't just want like meat. You want to add in, you've got to put offal in there. A dog needs 6% worth of offal, which you would love to handle, I reckon, Stacey. And a lot of these companies, so they'll add in the offal, they'll add in a bone content, they'll add in, some veggies sometimes, or eggs, or turmeric, or, you know, all sorts of different things that can be beneficial.
I'm going to say, you say that, but as a company who's making raw food, they don't have to have a nutritionist on board or a vet on board. They can just make
and
sell it as a, you know, here we are, this is the next thing, best thing since sliced bread, come and buy our stuff.
Yeah. So it's all about marketing.
Yeah. And I mean, I know there's here, I have seen some stuff that's been marketed as, you know, approved by vets. Well, I think it's changed now because it's made by a vet. But that's it. It's just one vet.
Yeah. And vets,
so that doesn't mean it's approved. So we're back to that minefield again, aren't we? Of how, you know, how do you really, really know that what you're getting is, but that could be across the board. I mean, that's not just processed food. That could be the processed, the, you know, raw for anything. That's the whole way across, isn't it?
I do want to talk to you guys before we wrap up about, it's a company called Hemopet, which is, and I'll link to this obviously, but Hemopet. It's an online, it's an online thing. It's an online portal. and they do what they call a Nutri-Scan test. So you contact them, you send them, they send you a swab sample, you swab your dog's mouth, you send it back. And it was created by a clinical research veterinarian called Dr. Jean Dodds. And what they do is they test that swab. They can test up to 112 ingredients to provide you with a specific results on your pet's intolerance and sensitivities. So you send them the swab, they have a look at it, and they can work out what your dog is intolerant to or what they might be sensitive to, and then you can remove that out of their diet. And they do, I've done this for a dog in the past, and they can determine, you know, which are the main ones you shouldn't feed your dog, which ones you can a little bit, and which ones you shouldn't, you know, all those sort of stuff, or which ones you are okay to feed them. And I made a note of this case study that they did. So it was a red miniature poodle, 5 years old, had diarrhea on and off for several years, and at one stage was passing mucus and blood. The vet prescribed a bland diet and antibiotics and saw some improvement. Then in 2014, the dog got sick again with diarrhea, passing blood and mucus, and some vomiting. He was also experiencing an increased level of stress and anxiety. So they did a Nutri-Scan and identified which foods to avoid. His stools are now normal and his energy levels have increased. He has not had any significant bouts of diarrhea in months. As one would expect, his overall health and happiness appear much improved now that he is feeling better, and his overall level of anxiety has decreased somewhat. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, they've identified the foods that he's shouldn't be having, and it's kind of helped him with his anxiety levels.
Those the tests for food allergies were not that accurate.
I don't know about any other tests apart from that one. I can't comment, and I can't really comment on how accurate that one is. But I did do it with a dog in the past, and yeah, it came back with a scraped long list and. I don't know, but I mean, it's if your dog is experiencing some sort of health issues, I mean, can it hurt to get it done?
Well, how much is it, Sarah?
$290. It's not cheap. Jean Dodds is quite it's very well known. I mean, this is not some backwater vet going on. So when you say take a swab, where do you take a swab from?
Just the mouth.
All right. Okay.
That's much better than the other end.
I don't know. If you were spending a fortune on vet visits because your dog is ill, then maybe it's just another tip or help, you know, that might make a difference. Yeah. And if it makes a difference, is it, you know, maybe it's worth spending that money to get it
done. Yeah, definitely. I would have to learn more about its accuracy, but if it helps, then obviously it's saving a lot of vet bills and the welfare of your dog, basically.
Yeah. And look, I can't comment on its accuracy. I've just, you know, the only information I've got is by going to their website. So,
That's interesting.
Yeah. Sarah's going to do it and let us know how it goes for Ernie.
This is the one that I'm just trying to see where it is, because it's kind of like it's, well, basically they're in America.
Yeah.
Where did you send yours off to? Did you send it to America?
Yeah. You just contact them through the website.
Do it as a business expense.
Did I? Oh.
Could I do that now?
Yeah, totally.
A business expense. We can do it as a test case.
Right. Okay, well, that was all very interesting. I definitely have a couple things to add to the show notes.
I've got two, some as well.
Given your biasness towards raw food, what advice could you give to listeners who maybe for whatever reason really, really don't want to give their dogs raw food? They want to give them some kind of alternative. What advice would you give them as far as what to look for. You know, do we want to look for particular ingredients, or are there things that are little red flags on packaging that you kind of really want to stay away from?
I wouldn't go for the cheap ones. I wouldn't, you know, I'd be really cautious about heading down that route, because you don't know where the meat's coming from or how it's being processed. That would be my main tip. Any vet's going to recommend something that they sell, but I mean, I think you know that it's probably going to be better quality than something you buy from the supermarket. That's not to say that all supermarket brands are bad, but I think they do vary in, you know, how good they are. And just be careful of clever marketing, because there's plenty of that out there. So, yeah.
Hypoallergenic being the big one, isn't it? What about ingredients? I mean, one of the things that I always say to people is the same as you would for a human being, you know, look at the ingredients on the back. And if some of them don't make sense, or if it's not something that you can buy in your local supermarket, then maybe you don't want to put it in your gob. So when you've got a list of ingredients that's 3 miles long and ends in all these weird and wonderful letters, that maybe that's not the best idea.
Yeah.
And to look for ingredients you can buy. So, you know, say what is the protein source? What is the carbohydrate source? What are all the individual ingredients? And could you go buy them individually and put them all together?
Yeah. And watch out for sugars. Watch out for sugars and all those chemical names. I mean, you've got to wonder why they have to put all these chemicals in there.
The other thing that we didn't talk about is the Common Care, the Purina Common Care. No. It's a probiotic. Yeah, I think we've talked about it. It's a...
You can't get that up. That's not available in the UK.
Oh, is it not? Huh.
No.
Well, Purina did a study on it. You know, but it, of course it was by Purina, so that's a little tricky.
That's the problem, isn't it?
And of course they found that it helped. So it would be interesting to have that done by a third party. But I mean, the study itself, I mean, you know, we would always hope for repeats of the study and larger studies and all of that kind of stuff. But they did a blind, and they had the placebo, and then they switched them after they had a washout period, and then they switched them, I think, and had it 6 weeks on the Common Care, 3 weeks washout period, and then 6 weeks on the placebo, and we're looking at the like certain anxious behavior, you know, quote unquote anxious behaviors, barking, jumping, spinning, and pacing, I think were the main ones.
It's so a probiotic, isn't it?
What's that?
I've just found it. It's a probiotic.
Yes.
So I have seen it, but it's as far as I'm aware at the minute, it's not available in the UK, but it's just one single probiotic. It's, here we go. Bifidobacterium longum. There you go. BL999.
Yep.
So it's just one.
I like when they can shorten it to things like BL999, because I can say that with confidence.
But I mean, the thing is with a lot of these things, with the probiotics or the prebiotics, is the... A lot of them are now available from online pet companies and things. And it's one of those things that it's unlikely to do any harm, and it might help. Then again, it might not. And if it doesn't, then you just, you know, stop using it and carry on as normal. I mean, I know that for Ernie with the probiotics and prebiotics, it certainly helps him. I don't know whether it helps with his level of anxiety or not, but it certainly helps with his gut. And if his gut's happier, then he's happier. And I suppose that's the same with everything, isn't it? If you're feeling well, then it bleeds into everything else at the end of the day.
Right.
So what have we learned? We've learned that the gut and the brain are connected, can affect our emotions. Watch out for high sugar, high carbohydrate foods. Do your research. And if you can, if you're going to add probiotics, then try and go for a natural one. You don't need to buy, you know, you don't have to buy prepackaged ones. You can buy green tripe, for example.
thanks for listening to today's episode of Tales from the Doghouse. Perhaps we have left you with more questions than answers, but it's always good to be in a conversation and, you know, make informed decisions and intentional decisions. So hopefully we've guided you to do that. I am Stacy Bell, and I am with Focused Fun. You can find me at www.focusedfun.net or on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs.
And I'm Sarah McLaren. I'm from the UK. You can find me on Separation Anxiety Solutions, website www.separationanxietysolutions.com, and on Facebook and on Instagram. And thank you very much for listening. And also,
I'm Ness Jones. I'm in Australia, and I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. I have a heap of links to put in the show notes, so you lovely listeners can do your own research. Don't take my word for it or anybody's word for it. Do your own research and find the diet that suits you best and what suits your dog best as well. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and other fabulous listening apps. We shall be back next week. Bye.
Fabulous. Bye. Bye.